is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
This is only a test.
DJ's an MC. This DJ, he gets it out.
Listen to this disc jockey's introduction to...
Two DJs and a mic with your host, DJ Mike.
Is that a timetable?
And DJ JP.
Well, get on it. It's your time.
Give me the mic.
Jeffrey,
man, I'm doing all right.
Yes, how you doing, Mary? We want to thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. We again, I love your man. It looks good over there. You make me feel bad.
I actually was sort of feeling embarrassed. You guys have these cool backdrops, and I'm like, my house.
No, that's hey, that's wonderful. I love it.
We do different ones, but
yeah,
it's just I have some too, but they're not cool like yours.
Oh, they're cool, Mary. Don't worry about it. They're cool. Yeah, they're cool. Yeah.
No, they're good. So we want to thank you again for joining us on Two DJs and a Mic. This is our weekly show that we do every Tuesday at 7:30 Central Standard Time. Mm. And today we have the great Mary Nessie, owner of Toast and Jam. Mary, tell us a little bit about yourself, or tell them, and this would be new for me too.
Well, first of all, your opening credits are awesome. I was like, just sort of like watching them like it was a movie or something. So good job on that. A+ production.
Thank you.
So let's see. I started the company in 2005. Actually, I had been doing weddings for a couple of years, and I just decided it was time for me to start a company and try to turn, this random skill that I have into doing, having my own company. I actually started, I'd been working in radio, in non-commercial radio, since 2001. And I did a morning drive show. And one day a person called in the request line and asked me to DJ their wedding. And that's how I got started in it my first wedding. I rolled up and I had a 5-disc changer and a disc man that I had plugged into like a crappy, like 2-channel mic mixer. And I did my first, and I had a book of CDs, you know, like with all the pages. And I DJed a whole wedding off of those two things. And it was like honestly, it was like I was in a fugue state. I got out of it. I couldn't, when it was over with, I was like, I can't believe I just got paid money to do that. And I was like, that has to be the rest of my life.
Wow.
And it was.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
That's the first. I'm talking about a five disc change.
Yeah, like a, it was a, like I had to like just eject it as quickly as I could.
Yeah. Yeah. Round one that spit them in and
yes.
out.
Yes, and it did a full rotation, you know, like every time it opened. Yeah, and
it would leave the other disc in that's playing, but it's going to do a full rotation. To
yeah.
The next
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was, you know, I didn't have a BP. I actually didn't have a BPM counter until I started working with Serato, but I was on CDs for years before I moved over to Serato. But yeah, so I did my first wedding and then I did them for another company for a couple of years and then started Toast and Jam in 2005.
Wow. So one quick question, and it just hit me when you was telling me that. So how much dead air did you have?
None. None. Because I had a two-channel mixer.
Oh, can I tell you why, Mike?
Why?
Because she was on the radio.
And yeah, yeah.
That is a no-no on the radio to have dead air. I know. That almost kills a radio DJ when there's
uh-huh. dead air. Yeah. Oh, it is really bad. And so I like dead air. It's true because I did radio. Dead air has always been dead air and just general silence. Boogie, you know, like it makes my heart like I've done something wrong.
I knew it. I knew because as a radio DJ, man, you can't. That will get you in trouble more than anything else.
And I'm sure with you guys as well, don't you kind of have an internal clock on everything? Like,
yes.
Like yeah. It's like, yeah. Like I can look at the timestamp on a song and I know exactly how much time I have to fuck. Can I swear on this thing?
Yeah.
I know. I'm so good at figuring out time. I'm sure you guys are too. I'm sure everybody who's listening probably feels the exact same way, but it's like, I can start playing a song and I know exactly how much time I have before I have to start like paying attention again, or, you know, before I have to start switching over the song. Like it's baked so deeply into me.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you know your music,
mm-hmm.
you know that. So, and in radio, you have those starts where you got so much time to talk the intro of the song, if there's one in there. So radio really will make you ready to be a DJ because it gives you ins and your outs and already you learn that from the jump. I did a little radio too, so.
And when I was doing radio, like in the early days, we were on carts, these like weird CD. The way you load a CD is not like in radio. It's like you have to put the CD inside this little like plastic sleeve that you would then like, you know, it was almost like a mini 8-track, if that's a reference that anybody understands. Well, and so you would have to you put the cart in, then it has to wind up, and I was doing radio, doing hard time.
Go back to reel to reels, Mary, trying to roll the reel to the right part of the song. Having to cut and slice, yes ma'am, to make a commercial. Let me cut that, slice it, tape it back together. Yeah, that's real long.
Yeah, yeah. The kids these days,
they don't understand.
Yeah, they have no idea.
No, that's a great start. So, Mike, let's jump into this, man. Let's get these questions rolling. Let's learn a little bit about Mary.
Okay, well, Mary answered some of the questions, so we're going to jump right into some other things. So what type of music did you listen to as a kid?
Well, I mean, this is a great question. I'm the fifth of six kids, and my mom was in bands my whole life. Like she was in a Dixieland jazz band for the majority of my life, and they like performed like and I was in Omaha, Nebraska, by the way. Like I wasn't in Louisiana. There's no good reason why my mother.
She's a corn husker.
Exactly. But my mom was also, my mother actually was, my father owned a restaurant. My mom was the singer in the bar, and that's how they met.
Wow.
So music's always been very deeply embedded in my family. And so, and I had older brothers and sisters, and they were all, there was 5 years in between me and the next ones. They were always they were quite a bit older than me. Uh-huh. And so they were really cool. Like, of course, my older siblings were all of them were cool in their own way. And they were all into like really cool music. So like when I was like 10, I got a mixtape that had like the most insane wide berth of music from, like, you know, well, so when I was like, before I got turned on to cool stuff by my older brothers and sisters, I was very much into Madonna. Madonna was like my,
she was cool.
Was my,
She was cool.
Yeah, she still is cool, by the way. Okay. I paid a lot of money. I'm going to go see her in August. She's playing here in August.
Yeah. I'm with you. I love
it'll be my third time.
I love Madonna too.
The material girl in the material world.
I mean, a lot of parties. Vogue.
One of my favorites. Borderline, one of my favorites.
Getting to the Groove. I mean, they're all over.
Oh, yeah. It's
probably the biggest hit right there.
Like a Prayer. Anyway, in fact, my little sister and my friend Liz, we had a Madonna club and we would like dress like Madonna. I was like 8 and we would go down to this creek by our house and just sit there and talk about Madonna. It was like, I wish I had a photograph or even like audio of that whole thing because it was terrible. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen?
What's up, Lindy? Boogie.
So I was really into the radio or really into like pop music in general. And then I got this mixtape that had like the Velvet Underground and like all like the Clash and the Cure and Joy Division. So I actually got really into like new wave music. Mm-hmm. And so I listened to a lot of like New Order and, Depeche Mode. And then the early 90s when I was in high school, that was the grunge era. So Nirvana, et cetera.
Yeah, okay. I love Nirvana. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I never got to see them live. Very regretful.
Yeah, love Nirvana. I can listen to Nirvana every day.
And then I just, in that, you know, when I moved to Chicago, I came here for college. That's how I found all my friends, was going to shows and you know, going to rock clubs. And I mean, that was the great thing when I moved here. It's like everybody came here. So I got to see a million shows and all my idols, and got to get really into going to like dirty punk shows. And we all have that phase.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. So did you get into any of the house music when you got to Chi-Town?
It's so funny you should ask that, because no. I think I might be the only like person in the city of Chicago that, at least as long as DJs go. I mean, and in fact, I just recently kind of like understood house music. Like it was never my thing. And there's DJs that do it so well, and I didn't understand it. And then I realized that, like, I just didn't do enough drugs, I think, to really understand what the house music could be.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully it wasn't just drugs.
Or maybe I was doing different drugs. I don't know.
Some of it was good, but I'm with you, man. I never really cared for it either.
Yeah.
I played it and and I just never really got into house. But I mean, there are some people I love, like Crystal Waters and of the other ones, and CC Peniston.
Yes.
Kind of on the edge or the other side. But those tracks, Gypsy Woman is one of my favorite tracks of all time. So, yeah.
Well, for me, what got me into it is because when I started DJing, it was the electro funk that grabbed me for the most part.
So who qualifies as that?
Yes. Yeah, so house and electro funk is almost the same thing.
What was the big hit of electro funk?
Man, there was so many.
Or like, what's an example of electro funk?
I'll say Kraftwerk.
Okay.
Waterfronts or Numbers.
Daft Punk.
Okay.
Yeah, I got you. I was wondering too, man, because I was like, is he going somewhere? Because
I was
almost in house though, Mike.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's close.
And they were Euro, so it was kind of, it was kind of different.
Kraftwerk?
Yeah, they're from right there. Yeah.
Krautrock.
Yeah, it's close, you know, so that gave me the ability to have an appreciation for house music.
Mm-hmm. It's not so much, you know, just I like a guitar. Like, do you know Megan Taylor? DJ Megan Taylor, she's from here in Chicago, and like she always kind of gives me, she's like, can't believe I don't like house music, and I'm like, I just like guitars, and she's like, I get it. We all have our thing. We do.
We all have our thing.
I have several things.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's a great one, Mike. I'm gonna let you ask this one since this was your question.
So what was it like DJing for President Obama and Michelle and Vince Young,
Vince Vaughn
and other stars? How was that experience?
I mean, you know, I'm not the DJing for President Obama the first time, because there were two times. It was truly one of the greatest nights of my life. Like, and I have a child, I've been married, I've done a lot of great things in my life, and DJing for President Obama's like as good, if not better, than those things. It was for a wedding, it was Valerie Jarrett's, who's like his trusted, it was her daughter's wedding. And this was in 2012. So it was an election year, actually. The wedding itself was amazing, because like the bride was like, I want dancing the whole time. And that's not something, at least in Chicago, we don't do it that way, where people usually dance during cocktail hour. Usually it's like they come to drink and then they eat and then they dance. It's like boom, boom, boom. It's not like we don't have like the East Coast style thing where they're dancing through dinner. Like, it's just mostly just, and she wanted dancing during cocktail hour. And I'm like, I can do anything. I'll try, but like that doesn't really happen. But if it, I'll play music that goes towards that direction. And I played music during cocktail hour and people were dancing. And then all of a sudden, like Barack Obama's head kind of bounces like in front of me. It was, I'll never forget it. It was Get Down On It by Kool & the Gang. And whenever I hear that song, I think of Barack Obama's head.
Like, oh, wow. That's too cool.
Bopping in front of me. But the best part of the whole night was I was under a tent. There was a tent down below that had where dinner and the ceremony were, and then dancing was uncovered. It was in a backyard of someone's house, and I'm playing, and people are going crazy. This is actually during dancing. This is after dinner, mm-hmm. and all day long there were storms that were being threatened and it didn't really seem like it was going to happen, and I played Teach Me How to Dougie, and Michelle Obama comes to the middle of the floor and clears everybody out and literally teaches everybody how to Dougie. Like, and I'm like, and we had to surrender our phones. We weren't allowed. And I'm like, this is the worst experience. Like water everywhere, not a drop drink. Like, I don't think it was captured on, I don't even think anybody got it. Like, no one was let up. They had a photographer, but they didn't have video.
Oh, wow.
And you weren't allowed to use your cell phones. Like,
crying.
Yeah, it was insane.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Did you know they were going to be there?
Oh, yeah. I had to sign an NDA.
You couldn't, like, say, do y'all mind if I hire my own videographer?
No, we all had to go through background checks. Like, it was a whole thing.
That is too cool.
But I do have photographs. The bride, I mean, she allows me to can use the photographs in my stuff.
You need to invest in some Ray-Ban glasses that record.
So she teaches, you know, she's friends of what, she gets everybody to like teach them a Dougie. And then I went from that into like, I think I went from Dougie into No Diggity. And I used to do this little combo that was like, it was Teach Me to Dougie, No Diggity, and then I would go into Paris. And so I start playing Paris and everyone's going crazy. And they're like standing there, everyone's hands, Barack and Michelle in the middle of the room. Then all of a sudden the sky opens up and it starts downpouring and no one left. They all stayed out there dancing their asses off. And it's raining and Barack Obama was in the middle. I don't think I've ever told this story, actually.
Wow.
This is like, I've never told it publicly before, but yeah, that was an amazing experience.
Now they know.
Yeah. That was an amazing experience. It really was.
Wow. That's cool.
And I can imagine, I know you was like on top of the world.
Yeah. It was truly a great, and I actually met him. We talked for a little bit. It was great. It was like the, it was a perfect night.
So yeah, what was the second time?
After I did that, his campaign reached out to me and asked for me to DJ his birthday party.
Oh. Wow.
And it was a fundraiser, so
different. It wasn't like
it was his birthday party and he was like coming over to me and saying like, what's it gonna take for me to hear, you know, let's get it on. But it was a fundraiser for his campaign, but they asked me to DJ that too. So,
oh wow.
So technically cool. I've DJed for him twice.
I don't care if you just showed up and played one song as he walked in. The presidential march, that's twice. You're in the building with Baraki.
I actually DJed, I did a thing for the Jarrett family. I was, Valerie was, Michelle Norris was interviewing Valerie Jarrett, and they got Michelle Obama to do the intros for her. So I was DJing that too. So I got to DJ for Michelle.
Oh, wow.
Once alone. Once too.
Ooh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And I guess Vince wasn't as great, huh?
No, but Vince Vaughn, that was a real fun one. That was I had to sign an NDA for that one that just expired. I think I looked it up so I can actually talk about it now. But I had just had double bunion. These are funny stories. I kept telling these stories on a podcast, but I had a really sexy procedure done to me where I had my bunions removed from my feet. This is like 10 years ago. I had bunions and I had them both done at the same time. Stay with me. I'm a wedding DJ. I stand on my feet a lot. My feet were in a bag.
We understand.
You feel my pain.
You feel your foot pain.
So I had double bunion surgery and I had it done 2 days before Christmas because I'm like, no one's going to need me to DJ anything. I wasn't working New Year's Eve. I had a 6-week recovery time. I had nothing booked in that time. So I'm like, this is the safest time for me to get double bunion surgery because I'm not going to have to stand. So I have the surgery and 2 days after Christmas, I get a phone call from this woman and she's like, hi, I need you to do my wedding. It's in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I just had foot surgery. I can't come. And she's like, I really want you to do it. I'm like, I understand that you want me, but I literally can't stand up. I had double bunion surgery. I had my feet broken and realigned. Like I have pins in my feet. I cannot do your wedding. And she's like, we just really want you. And I'm like, I understand that. Like, I don't know how many of you guys can tell you. I can't even stand. I can't stand up. And she's like, we have to send an NDA to do this wedding. And I'm like, okay. Can I sit down? Who is it for? And she's like, well, I can't tell you until you sign it. And so I meet with her and I don't know who she is. And I signed the NDA and they're like, we're still not going to, and they put the names of the people on there, but I'm like, this isn't anybody. Like what kind of dork needs an NDA? Like it felt very self-important. Like it felt very like they weren't anybody, you know, like haven't you ever DJed something? Like you'll do like the Hewlett Packard Christmas party or something and then make you sign an NDA. Or have you guys ever had to do that? Like where it's like, it's just, you're just at a corporation. Yeah. And we didn't have to do that for Hewlett Packard, but we have did that before where we've been with like, you know, like big company openings or whatever. And they don't want it to get out that like the CEO got drunk and got handsy. So I don't know who these people are. I do all the prep work for their wedding. And then we had to meet them in a parking lot in a church just in a suburb about 20 miles north of the city the day of the wedding where we were going to surrender our cell phones and then sign another NDA. And so I had to have an assistant because I couldn't stand. We go to this parking lot, we surrender our cell phones, and then they hand us the real NDA and it says Vince Vaughn. That's how I found out that I was doing his wedding as I was driving to it. I mean, I had all the information, I had all their music and all of their other stuff, but then
that's cool.
It was really cool. And the wedding was great. The only they had wanted to use, I shouldn't tell the story. I don't feel like this is
they don't want anybody to get in trouble.
They chose a song that they wanted to use for their first dance, and then they wound up nixing it. And because they thought it was a little too kitschy to play for their first dance, and they chose something else more traditional. So they did the first dance, and then I was like, well, I'll just save that song for the last song of the night. Like, I'll play that song because it's special to them. And, you know, so I saved it, played for the last dance, and the room goes crazy. There's a circle around him. It was super fun. Like, it was just, it was the most perfect way to end this wedding. And then a bunch of people started going, one more song, which I hate. There's nothing I hate more than being one more songed, because nothing is ever going to be as good as what got you them to feel that they wanted more from you in the first place. Like, yeah. Nothing's going to match that energy. And I was still on CDs. Okay. This is how long ago this was. I was still on CDs. And I also was a really late adopter to Serato. And so they're like, one more song. I'd already kind of packed up most of my stuff. And they're like, one more song. And Vince Vaughn gave me this look like, you know, you can't say no to him. He's gigantic and famous. And so I grabbed the first CD I could find, and they're like, one more song. And I'm like, ah, and I like put the CD in, and I just hit play. And they're like, one more song. I believe in miracles. You sexy thing. It was the biggest, it was the lamest song to play after being one more songed after like this triumphant night, and I just throw on You Sexy Thing. Just mortifying.
Did it work?
No.
Oh.
No. No. It didn't work.
You created an everlasting memory.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. I ruined the memory. Like, it was this like hot end, and then all of a sudden it's 108 beats per minute, like just this like slow blomp of a song. Like, it was just a boner softener.
Oh, wow.
Can I say that on the air?
Yes.
You can say whatever you want to say anyway. Well, I'll take this one. So what is it about DJing that keeps you going? What keeps you doing this? What brings you back every weekend or however often you DJ?
Well, you know, it's funny that you should ask that question, because prior to the pandemic, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And then I had a kid in there, and I had, you know, I had been kind of tapering off. And prior to the pandemic, I hadn't done a stranger's wedding in like 4 years. And then the pandemic happened. And on the day of lockdown, which here in Chicago, I think was like March 16th or 14th or something. We had 564 weddings on the books for 2020 alone.
What?
Yeah.
Good.
Wow. Yeah. That was just 2020. We'd already done a bunch. That was just what was in the future of 2020, 564. Wow. And it was horrible. And then my main employee, because I had a full-time employee that ran everything. Like, I really wasn't doing that much other than having a lot of, you know, I was raising my kid, whatever. So she quit because she had a baby and didn't have childcare. So it all kind of fell on me and a couple of employees and it was horrible. But once we got to I lost a bunch of DJs during that time, and I, you know, got rid of some DJs, and you know, we had quite the year to kind of get through. And then once we started rebooking, people were rebooking for dates that either the DJ that they were previously booked with has already booked, or they weren't available. And so I went up taking on a full season of weddings in 2021, and I hadn't done, like, I think I did one or two weddings the previous 4 years. And so I was really scared, you know, that like, wow, that I wasn't going to be able to do it anymore. Cause I, you know, I have a team of DJs that do all this. I don't do them anymore. And so I, I rolled into that first wedding, and I was terrified. I was really scared. Like, I was very scared, cause that way I own the company, and they're thinking they're getting like, you know, yeah, the, you know, yeah, the like fucking, you know, Avicii showing up or something. And I'm just like, can I even go from the way you look tonight into, you know, signed, sealed, delivered? And, you know, like, what? I don't even know. So, but I got into it and I started doing it. I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot I'm great at this. Like, it was like riding a bike. And And I bought all new speaker. I mean, I like went all in. I bought almost all new equipment and like, you know, because I had a whole season to justify it. So that happened. And then last year I was the backup. I didn't have any weddings booked by the end of the year, I wound up booking like two or three, but I was just backup DJ for last year. And I once again did a pretty, pretty full season. And because we had like last year, I don't know if you remember, because it was a million years ago, but it was also just a year ago. My DJs just kept getting COVID. Like I picked up a lot of weddings like the night before because the DJ would get COVID. And so that sucked. It didn't suck. I mean, it sucked insofar that like I wound up losing a lot of time that I thought was going to be mine, but the weddings were great. And it was, you know, once again, really fun. But then toward the end of the season last year, I was like, I've been doing this for too long to be the backup.
Where are you at now? How many are you doing a year now? How many you got on the books for this year? Zero. So you just running, you just CFOing.
I'm CFOing right now.
CEOing. Okay.
CFO, CEO, COO.
Yeah.
I'm just not the CDJO.
Okay. Yeah.
But that was a conscious decision. Like I'm actually trying to get kind of out of everything with the DJ company. I'm like working toward, cause I want to focus on a different, like I've been running a DJ business. That's a really good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question. Like why am I doing this? Cause I love being a part of the higher, the overseeing the high level stuff for the DJ company, like finding leads and doing marketing and that kind of stuff. And I also like doing stuff like this, like being on podcasts and, you know.
Are you thinking about, am I going to break news? Are you trying to sell the company?
Oh, no. Are you just I got to get
an office in the corner like Phil Knight and sit on the couch with your shoes off and tell everybody else what to do?
Yes. you nailed it.
Okay.
I gotta pay this.
You don't want to leave. You just want to run the company.
Yeah, I don't want it. But I'm not that good with talking to, I'm not as good at like. I don't know things the way I used to on the nitty gritty of the wedding stuff. I used to know every venue like the back of my hand, and I used to know, all the planners. And I do know a lot of like the planners now because I'm actually I'm on the board of our WIPA chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a WIPA chapter?
We have a WIPA chapter. We have a NACE. We have a all kind of stuff.
I highly recommend you should become a member of WIPA if you're not one already.
I will note that, Mary.
You really should because it's there's not a lot of like DJs that are members of it, so you get to be kind of in rarefied air.
Maybe I can get you to send me a Dallas referral.
So. I bet I could. I don't think I'd get anything for getting you to join the Dallas referral, but I'm just saying I joined WIPA during and WIPA is the Wedding International Professionals Association for anybody who doesn't.
No, one of my wife's good friends, one of the planners she works with a lot. My wife does stationery. She's the president of WIPA right now. So she's trying to get more people to join. So,
wait, your wife does stationery?
Yes, ma'am.
So you're like a double wedding industry family?
K-I-L-L-I-N-G in it over here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I joined WIPA during the pandemic, and it's been really a great boon to my business having them in my.
Well, do you do more corporate stuff now? The company does more corporate stuff, or are you still doing more?
Weddings are always going to be our bread and butter. I mean, it's just we just love them. I mean, corporate's great, and I know that that's like every DJ's dream is to like not do weddings anymore and to kind
not
of.
Really. That's not true, Mary. That's not true.
That's good to know. I'm a generalizer.
Well, I love weddings because there's nothing like seeing the groom's face as the bride comes down the aisle crying or, just those moments.
Yeah.
You can't get those as corporate events. They might give away a big TV or something at a Christmas party. They mm-hmm. might, oh, you're the employee of the year. We're going to give you a car.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like seeing a groom's face yes. come down the aisle. Or, you know, being in the right place when they do the first look and you see the bride and the groom, or dad's face as he walks his. Or another great moment is that dance with dad, and I only want to dance for a minute and 30 seconds. Next thing you know, she's bawling yes. in her arms, and do I stop the song or do I keep it? You know, so no, I love weddings. Yeah. I get chills every time I do one. I don't think I'll ever. I still love DJing clubs and things, but weddings are more fun to me now.
And that's the thing is that like, that's like that was the thing I recognized when I started doing weddings again. I'm like, oh, I forgot what this feels like to have like 100 people in front of me, like being blown, their minds are being blown by what I'm doing. You know, like that doesn't happen to you very much with your cranky 5-year-old, you know, like there's no praise in motherhood. And I, that was something that I really realized. I'm like, oh, I really forgot how much I like, thrived on that kind of adoration. And so that is something like when I, and it's not like I'm sick of doing it. And it's not like I had a bad wedding. Like it, like last year, like it was, they were all great. It was just,
we're all striving to get in that position. I want to get in that position, but I love it. So I would say,
I'd
like to do one a month or something. I don't think I could just stop altogether. I still would want to do, yeah, go ahead, Mike.
But I was just saying, I don't think everybody is striving to do that because just like some of us have a fear of getting in front of a crowd, some of us have a fear of dealing with the back end things.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's a rare air when you're dealing with that. Because me, myself, I love to DJ, but I love both ends of it as well. Mm-hmm. I like to negotiate. I like to, you know, organize and make sure that things are running accordingly. You know, everything that you do as a owner, I love that just as much as I love to DJ.
Yeah.
But I know it's different. You know, some people, they're just not there.
Well, you know, and one of the things that really kind of drove me over the edge was that my son had a little dance performance, and I had to, like, I was supposed to go to it, and I had to do a last minute wedding. And I had to miss his little performance, and I was like, fuck this. Like, I shouldn't be missing.
Is this Jody with short hair? But go ahead.
Who's Jody?
A photographer that we had on the show. just, she blew the wheels off of the podcast. It will never be the same, but go ahead. You're good.
I just was like, I can't keep missing. I only get one childhood with him, and I can't miss these things.
And if you're in a position to do it how you want to do it, then by all means, do it that way.
You should do it.
Everybody's not in that position.
And it's always going to be here. DJing's all that is. I mean, you know, that all these people that are like naysaying about this potential oncoming recession.
AI.
You know, I'm just AI. I don't think AI is ever going to replace us. I know that's probably going to be famous last words, and they're going to be like, it's going to be on my gravestone. Like, haha, she said that the AI wasn't going to take over, but she died 3 days later from AI. I think people are always going to need.
Yeah.
Think about vinyl, right? Vinyl people thought was dead, and now it has come completely back around.
Yes.
I don't think we're ever going to get replaced by robots.
No.
But what I was gonna say, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay, don't worry about it. All right, we'll get back to it. If you think I'll come back, to go ahead, Mike. Keep it moving. We don't want to run out of time.
So you kind of touched on this, but I want to allow you to touch on it more. How you balance your family life with doing what you love to do.
Am I able to balance it?
Oh, I don't know. I'm asking.
That's why we asking.
It's hard. It really is. I mean, especially like I said, I had to miss my son's little performances last year. And, you know, I had him in 2014. And so, you know, I really slowed down between 2014 and 2020. Like that was, you know, me kind of, and that was a difficult time actually, just from like a mental place, because like prior to having my son, I was very much like DJ Marianisi, who owns Toast and Jam. And it was like, so much of my identity was sort of wrapped up in that. And then when I had my son, you know, and I was away, I took a maternity leave. And then I, came back and I had a full-time employee that was doing everything and doing it really well and didn't want to relinquish anything, which I know is rare. And so I kind of had nothing to do. And it kind of, I was like wandering in the desert. Like it was crazy. I didn't really know who I was. And I did some other business ventures that worked out fine, but I didn't really have my heart in it. And then one of the good things about the pandemic, if there is a good thing that could have come out of it.
Oh, a lot of good things came.
Yeah. Is I was able to figure out how to come back to the business in a way that made sense for me. Like, you know, I think that prior to the pandemic and prior to having my son, I kind of just ran the business and it was fine. And everything was fine. I really wasn't looking at anything. I wasn't like, you know, running accurate P&Ls, and I wasn't looking at my money right. I wasn't looking at, like, you know, return on investment on things. I was just like, well, can I afford it? Okay, fine. I don't care. You know, like I didn't know my numbers. I didn't know anything. And then because it was all taken away from me so quickly, I had to quickly like relearn what, you know, how I was running things. And and I was able to fix a lot of holes. And
yeah. It made a lot of us take a deep dive into what we're doing. And if you didn't make yourself better during the pandemic, shame on you.
Because, well, you're not here.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying you can still be here, but I'm talking about if you didn't take the time to dive into stuff and how we can do things better, how I can do this. But we really, a lot of places had a long break. We only had like from March to May, and we went back full. I've been doing full throttle weddings since May.
What? May of 2020?
Texas was, it was like Florida. They didn't care. We did our first wedding. It was 150 people. One person had on a mask in May of 2020. Me and my wife put up a TV screen and we said, don't come up here, text whatever you need to say. But I mean, from May 2020 all till today, we've been going full throttle in Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, I went back. I went back somewhere up in there too, Jeff, because it may have been a little bit after you, but I remember I had a wedding and I was upstairs.
Yeah.
And it was my first time being out. And I remember, you know, it was just this fear that was, you know, yeah. It was like I didn't want nobody. And the good thing, they had to come upstairs to get to me.
And you could stop them.
Yeah.
Were you wearing a mask?
Yeah. We wore masks, but a lot of the guests just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, no, it was a lawless land.
I have a question to ask you, Mary. So during that time or before, because I don't remember exactly what your talk was about. So did you ever have a coach, or have you ever had a coach? Coaching?
Yeah.
So did you have Matt?
Matt?
Out of Cleveland?
Matt Radicelli?
Rock the House, or did you go with somebody else?
No, I was not. No, I didn't even know that world existed. I was very much like... Mm-hmm. I didn't start getting into like the national DJ scene until like during COVID, but my first coach I got was in 2017, and they were just like a general business coach, but she was she changed my whole world. My first business coach. I highly recommend it. I feel like most people, especially in the DJ industry, I don't think many people go to undergrad for DJ studies and then graduate and then they start a DJ company. Like, that's not how it works.
Didn't you start offering those services? Because I know you had something that you were offering when you gave your talk, right?
Oh, yeah. I have an online course that teaches DJs how to grow and scale their businesses called the Toast and Jam Lab. If you guys are looking if anybody's needing
it. I couldn't remember what I remembered it for.
Yeah.
I knew it was something that you had was offering and I looked into it. And
yeah, it was, I made it in 2019, actually right before the pandemic. And I did that in 2019 and then and then 2020 was when I started marketing it. And that was when you saw me was at Midwest DJ. And then the pandemic hit and I couldn't do anything with it. And it's still a great product though. And I just still do offer those.
That's why I was wondering if you had got a coach or if you just started coaching, because I know that was something that you were offering.
Yeah, no,
I had took a close look at it because I said, I like what she, I really, you had a great talk when I saw you there and I was really impressed. And
thank
I said,
you.
if I ever put together a conference, that'll be one lady that I'll put on my list. Because
thank you.
It was different. It wasn't the same crap we get all the time, the same stuffy. And then, you know, here I'm trying to sell you a book after. So, you know
yeah, no, I don't have a book. Not yet. But yes, I would say if you guys, I highly recommend business coaching, whether it's me or somebody else, but I recommend it because most of the time when people become DJs, they don't.
There's no course for this. There's people that can teach you now because they've been through it.
Yeah. But you fall into it. This is a job that happens to you. It's like, oh, you've got DJ equipment. Like, come over and do this. And all of a sudden it's not like a normal job.
And if you think you get it figured out, you'll get kicked in the butt, and it's crazy.
Yeah. But
all right, keep it going.
But when you get a coach, they are the ones who can kind of help you get out of your own way. And your company is like just you guys, or do you have people under like subs?
So Mike has a smaller company that he runs. Well, I'll let you speak for yourself. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, yes, I have a smaller company, but I tend to send out anywhere from 4 to 5 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Have a smaller company. Jeff is more
full. Well, say smaller. He just doesn't have as many people that he trusts to go.
I mean, 5 is still a lot. It's not, that's what they said.
So we have between 7 and 12.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's we don't are have they- all the time.
Are your DJs independent contractors or are they W-2?
Right now, everybody is all 1099s because W-2s. We still haven't figured out how to, you know, we're still growing. We're just in our third year. We started in 2020. Started in the pandemic.
Both your DJs are W-2?
All my DJs are.
Yours too, Mike?
1099. I mean, 1099.
Oh, I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, it's 1099. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't wish that. I wish we had like 4 or 5 people on staff to do certain things, like maybe operations manager, booking, sales. You know, just have some people that you don't have to do everything and you can concentrate on one thing instead of trying to be everything.
Yeah.
You know, because some definitely suffers if you're trying to do everything.
Mm-hmm. You're doing stuff you don't want to do. And when you don't want to do it, you're going to do it take you twice as long, and you're going to make twice as many mistakes. Is it you or your wife?
And another gentleman, he's on here, Garrick. He posted a question a few minutes ago. So he was all excited to hear you again because he watched you on the multi-op. Oh. Yeah, that thing, and it was really good too.
The thing with the blueprint thing?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. Hi. Is this the amazing stationer?
That would be me.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Have you ever heard of Ijo Ray Ray? Ijo Ray Ray in Chicago, the stationer?
What's the name?
She's still on a venue too. I don't know what the name of her venue was. But she's like a big luxury stationer up there in Chicago.
What's her name?
Is Joe Ray Ray.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's who
that's my business coach.
Business coaching works, guys.
Yes, it does.
It does. I promise. I'm going to tell you, that one definitely did. So, yeah, she's opened many doors, many light bulbs have come on, things have sprouted and grown.
That rules.
Yes, but. All right, Mike, keep it going, brother. You got the questions. Let's roll them up. The one we have to ask. You're in a male-dominated business. How has the business treated Mary? Has it been tougher for you to open doors? Tell me your experience. And you can be open and candid because Rachel was, Fallon was. Everybody that we've talked to, they told us about, you know, their woes and how it's
crisis, huh? I would say, most of the DJs that work at my company are women, actually. I only have like a couple of dudes that work for me. It's been mostly women the whole time. And that's not really been by design. It's more just been by like me being okay with the vibes that they're bringing. Cause we run from a very ego-less place at Toast and Jam. And a lot of male DJs come with a lot of ego, and you know, that's not something that flies very well with me. But that doesn't mean, we do have some great guys who work for me past and present for the most part. One of the things I find the weirdest part of my job is like when people, like I've had a lot of, like I'll be setting up and people ask if I'm setting up for the real DJ. That's happened.
How funny. But yeah.
I'm like, yeah, a guy sent a tiny woman, all 5'2" of me, to come and set this gear up. And then he's going to show up and he's going to play 128 for about 2 hours. And then I'm going to come back at midnight and clean him out. Like, what? Like, what universe? But I also would say that almost every event that I do, someone comes up to me and says they've never seen a female DJ before. And I think they're saying it to me from a place of like, look at you. Look at who's picked themselves up off their bootstraps. Like, I've never seen a lady doing this job before. Like, good for you. And it's like, it doesn't make me feel good. Like, it doesn't make me feel like, look at me breaking glass ceilings. Like, I've been doing this for 20 fucking years. Like, where have you been? You know, like, I don't.
Do you drink?
No.
Okay. Do you let loose like on the client, on people like that when they come up to you and ask you, do you like say it all nice and soft? I've been doing this 20 effing years.
No, I say it, but I say it in a really nice way. I go, that's crazy because I've been doing this for 20 years. And they're like, oh God, did I just offend you? And it's like, no.
You made me feel great.
Yeah, like you definitely would say that to anyone, right? Would you go up to a guy and say, congratulations for being the 87 millionth white guy I've seen doing this job. keep on banking on. Like, what the fuck, man? Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's so belittling and it makes me feel like I'm taking a space from somebody else, you know, instead of like being here in my own right.
So you get it from that. So what about like trying to get into speaking and doing other things, you know, the conferences and doing stuff? How has those doors been for you?
Well, you know, one of the weird, I mean, because I have been going to a lot of conferences since COVID, I started going to a lot of them during and post COVID. And, and especially the DJ conferences, like it's usually a lot of guys. Usually there's like 200 guys and like 7 women. And so there is a bit of a like animal in a zoo kind of feeling where it's kind of like looking at me like, what's she doing here? Like, you know, and when the people are on stage, you know, I have kind of severe ADHD. So I have to kind of sit in the front row. Otherwise I get super, so I'm very visible at these things. And so, you know, when the people are up there on stage, sometimes they'd be like, all right, guys, you know, guys, you got, and then they look at me like, and ladies. And it's like, I'm here. Like, I'm sorry. I threw you off your wavelength.
I would say it like this. This is how I would look at it with you. You're strong. So they can come at you as hard as they want to, any kind of way they come. And you just keep pushing through. You don't let it affect you, stop you.
No, I can't. I mean, mostly because this is like, I mean, it, you know, it's a really interesting question.
That's what we think about this for a whole, well, we've had quite some time to think about yours. So we dive into what you tell us, and then we know some stuff that is happening in the industry or other things people said to us. So we just want to get, you know, your feeling on it. And I know some people try to not to really say, or, you know, sometimes they won't open up. You'll hit me later and say, well, this is what I really feel. But it's just interesting to hear, because every woman I deal with or lady in the business, I try to treat them just as fair. And because there's 1,300 guys and there's 5 black guys too. Maybe 7 women. So, you know, I know Mobile Beat and you're looking around, where is everybody else at? Or, you know, and then you're there, you're with your husband most of the time, the ladies are, because they're in a supporting role. So I understand. So I know what you, I feel the same.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's sad that we deal with those type of situations, but it happens in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Because like for me, and I just want to say this for me, like say I'm doing a wedding and I'm the only black person in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing to a all white crowd, and I'm playing, you know, say I'm playing a Heart-Shaped Box by Nirvana. So, mm-hmm. And they'll look back. They're like, and it's that look like, how do you know that?
Mm. And,
and for me, it's funny to me because I get a kick out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I'm not going to say there's no greater joy, but it's a joy to me to know that you are questioning me based on what you think, not what you know, but what you think. So it's funny to me that you have belittled yourself to that point.
Yeah. Well, and like, are you, when you are in those situations, like, but like when you're in a situation where you're the only Black person at an all white wedding, are you aware of that? Like, is that something that you're, it's not like you just,
I'm aware of it. I can't help it. And it's not nothing like makes me feel bad. I'm just, as a DJ, for me, I watch everything, because for me, when I'm playing music, I'm watching every response that I can see from the person. And that kind of dictates my next move. So I'm very observant of everything.
Of course. Of course. I meant just in general, like when you're, because I like when I'm in places where I'm the only woman, that's a very, and it happens a lot in DJ, like at DJ conferences, well, I'll be like the only woman there. And I'm like, wow, why am I the only white person there? Like, this is, or not, or the only, well, no, that was the next point I was going to make, is that sometimes I'm in situations where I, like, I'll realize that there's like, where there's only white people. Like when I'm in a situation where it's only white people, I'm like, because that doesn't happen to me that much, where like there's, I mean, it happens to me in smaller groups, but I'm like in a general group, I'm always kind of deeply aware. I'm like, wow, everyone here is white. Like, what? Why did this? I become very aware. I'm like, why did I find up in this very white space? I mean, I'm used to diverse climes, but what? How do we get on this?
Well, I mean, it's just taking us where we're going, wherever the music takes us. That's where we're going.
But yeah, so basically, I get become deeply aware of how much of the lack of women in those situations and how much of an anomaly that I am. And I do find that when I tell people what I do for a living, it's like, so do you actually do the DJing? Like, does anybody ever ask you that when you say you own a DJ company? Does anybody ever ask you, do you do the DJing? Or do they just assume you DJ?
They assume. And unfortunately, that's a crazy thing, because, you know, for you, I don't like that when, you know, and one of the things that me and Jeff have been really good about is, you know, being on the other side of those conversations, because that is a messed up thing to assume, you know, like, wow, so are you the DJ?
Always.
You know, and that's crazy.
Like, I just started a DJ company. Like, I'm this enterprising lady that was like, I'm going to get involved in one of the most difficult people to manage, and I'm only going to do that side of it. Like, I'm not going to get the payoff of like actually getting to have fun at this wedding. I'm just going to get to take the abuse of the person who's like negotiating the contract, or, you know, bouncing checks.
But everybody takes it differently, so I see you use it as a superpower to let them know you're in the building, instead of letting it bring you. You use it as a strength or as a motivation, and you don't let them get to you. But,
well, kind of, because I can't, like, I'm literally not qualified to do anything other than this. Like,
you went to DePaul. What did you get a degree in?
Art history.
You live in Chicago. You could go work at a great museum.
No, like, do you have any idea how hard it is to get a job in museums? It's impossible. Like, I was thinking, I remember saying to somebody, I'm like, I think in my retirement, I want to be that person that, like, the like old lady that's like at the museum and like wanders around and tells people about the art. And they're like, do you have any idea how cutthroat it is to get those free, those unpaid docent jobs? And I'm like, oh man, I can't go from one cutthroat industry to another cutthroat industry.
Okay. I got you. So, well, hey, stay happy in what you're doing. And look like you got about 6 seeds of income with radio podcasts and all the other stuff you got going.
I don't know if you know this, but there's no money in podcasting and there's no money in radio.
Anymore.
There is money in podcasting.
There is?
You just got to get to that point.
Wait, do you guys make money in podcasting?
Yeah.
Sponsor. We just need to have we'll have a sideboard conversation.
Yeah, there's money in this.
I've never made money. I pay money to do my podcast.
No,
we have a sideboard.
2 hours.
Jeff, did you see her head explode?
Yeah. There's money, Mary. You can make money.
Okay.
It takes time and you have to build a big audience, but you can make money.
How many listen? Do you guys talk about your numbers on the air?
Well, this is low because you know.
Well, no, just how many? Like, how many people like listen to their like listen to the podcast?
Well, we have other forms.
We do stuff on Spotify.
We're trying to build. This is something that we're trying to build, but we have other formats that we've been working on, and the numbers are beautiful.
Yeah, because yeah. I do a Spotify podcast. I interview like I interview Mike. I interview different people, and the numbers are okay, and they pay you. Anchor or Spotify will pay you money if you put a little blurb in their stuff. Other people will pay you to do stuff.
So
you can make money, sponsorships.
You guys need to tell me about some. I need to learn.
We can coach you on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just by mentioning their name and their company, you can make money. You know that, Mary.
But I mean, how do you choose the company?
If you got somebody who likes you and you just talk to them, say, how would you like me to mention your company on my podcast?
We'll talk about it, Mary.
Mm-hmm, yeah, you guys, thank you for
let me ask you another question. Something else I like about you is I love on your website. Your website is kind of cool and different.
Oh, yeah.
And
really, yeah,
like, this girl got peanut butter and jam on it.
It's unique.
And it's really unique, and I thought that was really cool. And then I love the part where you say, we throw away the list. You got a list of songs you don't play. You got this. We're outside the box. So is that something that draws your clients to you or do you?
Absolutely. I would say so when I first started I started the company mostly because I was like 28 and all my friends were getting married. And most of what you see in the world of wedding DJs is like, you know, they don't know who Kraftwerk is. Let's just put it that way. And so I was like, I wanted to be like the DJ for the hipster, like my friends, and so we were the company that you knew wouldn't do the chicken dance and wasn't going to do, you know, like games and props and shit. And so that was how we initially made our name was like, our song list started with a list of songs we won't play. And then over time, when you start doing a ton of weddings, you know,
we have a reputation.
And everybody thinks they're, you know, they all think they don't want that stuff. While we do get a lot of mainstream clients and then by mainstream means they want to have just like an awesome wedding with like good music. That's like, but it's like, you know, popular music, but like, you know, the guy who wants to, I did a wedding. Do you know who Gigi Allen is? He was like a punk in the 80s and he was gross. He'd poop on stage. He committed suicide on stage. It's like, he's a mess, but I had a client that like wanted to hear Gigi Allen at their wedding. And it's like, and I figured I got it in there and it was awesome. And like, everybody loved it. But as the thing is that like you can trust us with like your Bruno Mars and your Dua Lipas, but you can also trust us if you've got like, you know, I want to have German crap music from the late 70s, but not the stuff from the early 80s. Like, I've got you. I know when to play that stuff. You don't have to throw it out because your grandma doesn't understand it. Like, I love weird weddings. Like, I did a wedding once where the client was like, we only want new wave music. And I'm like, okay, I've got you. Like, that I couldn't be a better DJ for you. And I'm like, but that music's not going to work for everybody. And they're like, I don't care. And I'm like, okay, so like if no one else is dancing, you don't want me to switch directions? And they're like, we're paying for this and this is what I want to hear. And so the bride and groom were the only people dancing and they were like, they were so happy and no one else would dance with them because they didn't know the music. And everybody else had a horrible time, but the bride and groom had a great time.
So let me ask you this. How did that make you feel?
You know, at the time, I loved it because I was like, you know, I was sort of, you know, punk in my own, you know, like I kind of liked that I was like giving these people exactly what they wanted. They're playing music I liked. It wasn't like I was mad about that. But in retrospect, I kind of wish that I would have made more people at that wedding happy. But I also was like, if the bride and groom are clearly loving this, why won't you just dance with them? Like,
yeah,
like they're having a good time. Like it's almost like they were judging them for wanting to have this unique stamp on their wedding. But maybe on the other side of it, they knew that their family sucked and they were just gonna be like, you know what, my family sucks, they're not gonna support me, so this is my way of getting my needs met. Now that I'm thinking about it, that's a beautiful sentiment.
Well,
okay. I hope they're still together.
Okay.
Sorry, I just did a full circle thought cycle.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I love the fact that that's your story and you're sticking to
it. You put the train on the tracks and then you ran it right back up. I mean, you ran it right into the back of somebody's car.
Yeah.
But no, that's, because that's a tough one, because I did a wedding and they wanted all this music. But luckily, everybody there knew it, so they all sing and dance to it. So it wasn't as bad, but, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. I feel like, you know, I meet some DJs sometimes and they're like, you know, I've got my things. I know what works. I don't want clients to give me any input. I'll play their first dance and their other stuff, but I just want to do whatever I want to do because, like, I know what that group wants. And in many ways, like, I could go into pretty much any wedding, any event blind, and I'm sure you guys could too at this point. Like, I can walk in the room. I can walk around. I can look at some things. I can play some stuff during dinner to kind of see what gets some head nods, and then I can just destroy them, you know, like I can, we could all do that. But I mean, I think that the thing
No, go ahead. I have something I want to add to that, but go ahead. I'm listening.
I like when I'm able to like one of the things we like to say is that like, we're not going to DJ a wedding. We're going to DJ your wedding. Like it's, we want to make sure, like, we're not just doing the thing we do. Like, we're getting to know you. We want to know, like, you know, when you were in eighth grade, did you get dumped at a Backstreet Boys concert? So, like, I shouldn't play them, or maybe I should. Like, I don't know. I want to know, like, all of the little nooks and crannies so that, like, I can blow your friends and their fam, you know, everybody's minds respectively. And I think that that can only be done with those songs that, like, you know, when you people come up, they're like, oh, you got to play this song, it was our song, and you play it, and a couple are like, why are you playing this song? It's like the worst memory, you know, like they think it's the friend thinks that it's something that's going to really mean something, and then ultimately it didn't. And
yeah, it meant something.
They had two experiences that were tied. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you failed one way, but the couple failed another way. So yeah. But you touched on something that that me and Jeff talk about, and I love. For me, I go in with no plans. The only plans is what my client wants me to do in regards to them. Mm-hmm. In regards to everybody else, I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find you when I get there. And when I find you, I'm going to beat you on your head until you're out. And that's it. You know, for me, it's like going in, rolling in grenades. Everybody gets one.
Well, and I think that, you know, as a woman in this, I feel like I have a little bit more, like, I have scrutiny, and I'm sure that you also get it as people of color when you're like around a bunch of white people. Like, you know, I feel like well, maybe you don't have this feeling. Hopefully you don't have that. I feel like I'm coming in with a deficit where people are already thinking they're not going to get what they think they're going to get.
So I feel you. So when somebody walks up to you when you walk in the door, do you know country and western? You don't think we start with a deficit too a lot of times?
Yeah, so. Of course. I didn't want to project that onto you, but I assume that you.
No, we do.
You know, and it's like, you know, I feel like I have to come in and be five times better than what they would have expected from, you know, what they were expecting. You know, and I feel like, and that extended to, like, you know, when I was really reluctant to, this is so dumb, but I was really reluctant to move to Serato because it felt to me, if I'm just like tapping away at a computer, it won't look like I'm actually doing anything. And it'll look like I'm just playing a playlist, which I'm not doing. And I felt this big insecurity, like, at least with CDs, it was like, I'm putting it in, I'm scrolling it up, I'm finding the cue point, like, I'm doing all of the stuff, and it makes me look like I'm doing something. But, like, on the computer, it didn't look like anything. I know this is stupid, but it was just like my own, like, insecurities of it. So in my mind, I still approach DJing in Serato the same way I approached it on CDs, that, like, I don't want to do the same thing. I don't have a whole lot of routines. Like, I always play these five songs. I might have like two or three songs that all kind of go together, but, like, I feel like I'm kind of cheating the people out of it if I'm just doing the exact same shit I did week after week.
Well, for me, I can't do the same thing over and over again. I get bored. And when I get bored, I get sloppy.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
Sloppy, I'm not paying attention. So, mm-hmm. And for me, I love to do it, but it's also the competition, the ability to compete. And a lot of times I'm competing with myself.
Mm-hmm. You're always competing with yourself.
Yeah. So it's like an internal battle going on, even though I'm playing music for people. But I have to do something different so I can stay attentive mm-hmm. and where I won't get bored.
But I also think that, like, you can't, like, every crowd, even though I can say every crowd's exactly the same, so I also feel like every crowd is different, you know? Oh, and so you don't want to like I always try to choose, like, I always choose one person that's not the client, that's like my muse, and I'm just DJing to them all night long. They don't know it. They don't know mm-hmm. that I'm doing this to them, but I'm basically, I chose that person, and everything I'm doing is to make that person happy. Is that, do you guys ever do?
Can I ask you a question? Did you DJ online at all during the pandemic?
I didn't. I couldn't. Okay, I didn't understand it.
That's what I'm saying. Another thing you could learn. So I would pick one person that commented, and I would DJ to that person the whole time I was doing the show. Or if we were on a Zoom and I could see all the people, I would pick one person that looked like they were having the most fun, call their name, and they were lost for the rest of the night. Because, you know, in a party, you can't read people's names. So, like I say, if you could get stuff out of the pandemic to help you, and that, I mean, it helped me to focus. Okay, like you say, finding that one person. Okay, I'm gonna mm-hmm. DJ to you all night, and if you cool off, let me find, you know, you. Mm-hmm. But I do that too. You know, you find somebody in the room. Okay, this person's having a good time, and I'm just gonna ride them until the wave is gone. And then when I see another one come out there, I'll ride that wave. And, you know, who's gonna be my party leader for the night?
See, I actually choose that one person. And then if they try to leave the dance floor, I'm like, no, you're not. And I like, then it becomes the challenge to get them to come back out. Like
But that, I mean, you have to play games, which is that little man?
Do you wanna get up here? He's naked.
No, don't do it to us.
He's got underwear on.
I thought he was streaking.
Yeah. streaking through the quad.
Yeah, through the quad.
Little 9-year-old butt. Remember the family circus in the newspaper comics? Uh-huh. The family circus. There was like the not me, the little naked kid with the butt that said not me on it.
Oh boy.
My son, he's not me. Not me, not me, not me.
So I do have a question that I didn't put up here. How do you feel? You know how some people, when it comes to typically, you know, having a job, so many of us work jobs that we hate. Mm-hmm. And we do it solely because of the money. And, you know, it's solely about the beer. How do you see, when you see DJs that you feel like may be in that same scenario, how do you feel about that?
Like they have a day job or they hate DJing?
No, they hate DJing and they just do it for money.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Okay. Please share.
Well, because I think we touched on a little bit earlier on. I think some people, I myself dealt with it. I mean, you know, I got, not say forced out, but I had my son and it really, like, I kind of reestablished my priorities, I guess, so to speak. But I also couldn't DJ like I used to. I mean, I was doing 65 weddings a year, which I know isn't a ton, but it's not nothing. And that's what I was used to doing. And to go from having that much like feedback, like positive feedback, to none or very little. And when I was doing weddings, I was like, I'd rather be home with my, I don't know. It was like, it was a difficult time for me. And I wound up having sort of like a identity crisis. Cause like I said earlier on, like I was, you know, DJ Marinisi, and all of a sudden I had somebody else running my company and I wasn't DJing myself. And I kind of lost like, a part of who I was. And I think that some people, especially if they've been doing it for 15, 20 years, you know, they don't know anything else and they've been doing it for themselves, most likely maybe having a, you know, two or three subs here and there, but nothing that like was a lasting like business with a culture and payroll. You know, like I think that if it's just you and you've been grinding for years, you don't know anything else. And there's not like a DJ's union. that like teaches us how to like, you know, like the end of like the NFL has, you know, like mm-hmm. where they perform, but they still have this union behind them that tells them how to use their money so they don't just become, you know,
destitute.
Yeah. They don't spend all their money when they're young. And, you know, then all of a sudden they have a car dealership. but it just seems like a lot of people in the NFL have car dealerships eventually. Yeah. But it's not like we have anybody out there like helping us figure out what middle age looks like for us or what retirement looks like, you know, especially when you're doing a job where you're getting $600 here or $10,000 there, you're kind of cobbling it together. And maybe you've got some bad advice about how to do your taxes or you don't claim enough and you aren't able to establish like that's one of the things that really kind of bums me out about this industry is that I feel like it's becoming more unified. There's, you know, more conferences, there's more of a push to make them more professional and to treat it like it's a real business. Mm-hmm. I mean especially since I've been in this industry, when I first started it was, you know, a couple of companies but mostly just a bunch of, you know, like, it's not like wedding DJs have like a really good reputation. It's not like it's known for being like a bunch of people that are like really established in their world and they're, you know, they're sweaty, you know, it's mustaches and tuxedos. And does this make sense? Am I making sense?
Yeah, because so do you think it has changed?
That's the thing, is I think it is changing. I think people are staying in it longer than it's less seen as like a job you do for a couple of years until you figure your shit out. Like, it's actually becoming like, you're able to make enough money doing this job where you can set yourself up as long as you're operating your business like it's a real business. Like, you're not just, you know, getting paid in cash and not claiming it and, you know, trying to dodge your taxes, because this is something I see with a lot of people that I've met, is that they're unable to establish credit and they're unable to like buy a house because they can't show proof of income because they've been running a bunch of their income, like they don't claim it. And when you don't claim that income, you don't get the, you know, like the able to establish credit or even have,
even on the books anywhere. People don't even know you exist. You can't establish business. Yeah. You can't buy any equipment on credit. If you do, they're going to charge you 32% interest. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get you. Yeah.
And so, you know, like my DJs started out as 1099. I moved to the W-2 in 2017. Mm-hmm. And that happened. I got audited a couple times and they weren't happy with the way I had my DJs classified. So I had to make them all W-2, which was actually it was great for me. Like, I highly recommend if anybody can make the jump. And part of one of my things I did for them was I set up a 401k, because there's no retirement. there's, and who knows where Social Security is going to be. So, you know, it was important to me to like at least try to help them.
So we may have that on another conference call. Mm-hmm. I really want to look into that to figure out how we could do that and put them over there on the other side eventually. Because are they full time? Which are they W-2? They just W-2, but they're not full time.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's like a part time job, but work. It's okay. All right, we can chat about that.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, and you know, we're trying to avoid the man coming and looking at our business too. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, and here's the thing: is that that's going to be changed. I mean, I think that it's a matter of time before everybody, the man starts coming down on everybody about, especially the 1099 versus W-2-ness of the whole thing. I think that's a ticking time bomb for the IRS, especially. I don't think they're going to come after a ton. There's not a ton of people making tons of money out on this business, but I do think that like there is enough. And especially after like 2020, when they allowed a lot of people that were 1099s to get unemployment. Now they've got a database of every 1099 person in the country that got unemployment, and they're going to probably want to know if those people were categorizing themselves correctly. I don't know. I don't want to be like a naysayer and end this thing on a low note, but I'm just saying.
No. I mean, that's good information, because we all need to start looking at that. Mm-hmm. And if it's better to do it that way instead of the other way, of course, you want to know the best way to run your business and what's going to help you the most.
Well, in many ways, it's better to beg forgiveness than, you know, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I have been on the wrong side of so much of this shit. You know, like, I've been sued. I've gotten audited. I mean, I feel like I've been through like everything, like all the seven plagues of being a business owner.
Oh my gosh. So let's not take it out on a bad note.
Yeah. But my point is that I have been through a lot, but I'm kicking, you know, like I feel like I have turned a corner in the last like 2 months, and I really feel like, you know, I feel like the pandemic is away from me. Like I'm.
So how can they find Mary if they want to reach out to Mary Toast and Jam, talking about the Toast Lab, or how can they find you?
They can get me at Toast and Jam DJs on all the socials and all the places, and then a Mary and Easy production, or you can get me on my podcast, which is called All Up in My Lady Business. It has nothing to do with DJing.
I saw it today. And I said, I'm going to have to listen to it on my walk tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start at the beginning. It'll make more sense.
Oh, you mean the episode? How many episodes in are you?
We've got 3 seasons, so probably like 40 episodes.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I have enough walking to that. Yep. Well, yeah. Mary, it has been a pleasure. I hate we had a mix up the first time.
But it's worth the wait to have you here.
Are you going to be in any conferences? Are you speaking anywhere, doing anything?
I will be in Midwest. I'm not speaking. I don't think I'm speaking at Midwest. And I will probably be at Marquee.
I will see you at Marquee.
And then I'll also be at the DJ Collective.
Okay. Harvest of Sound?
I am hoping to be there. That was something that I didn't know about that till last year. And
I know they just did that was like the second one. They did the first one kind of like for Shani's birthday or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I might be in Atlantic City. I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, somebody talked to me about that one last night. I talked to Kevin and another guy out of Pittsburgh. So we're hoping to be at Harvest doing a podcast with everybody that's speaking, everybody in the building, and Tyler is like telling me and Mike that we can interview everybody and run like all the interviews for the whole show. So
that could be fun.
That could be really fun. You could sit down and really go.
I know.
Somebody else's channel.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going to get you unplugged.
Unplugged. Mary, unplugged.
Haven't I shown you that being plugged in and unplugged, you're probably going to get the exact same thing out of me?
Yes, but it might even be a little different up close and personal. You might really let your hair down.
Yeah, might not put on makeup. You're like, you've got makeup on? Yeah. Why?
We just keep it. But man, it was great. I always enjoy listening to you. It was fun. The 2 times I've heard you speak, and when I saw you on the multi-op thing, that was really cool. And you're just dropping knowledge, and I'm glad to see a female boss out there doing her thing and not letting that you're a female stop you or hold you back or let anybody keep you in a box. And you now I'm creating my own damn box. I'm gonna get like Mary now, my box.
Yeah. Well, you know, I truly there was nothing else for me to, like, if I didn't make it in this job, I don't know what I'd be doing. So I wasn't gonna let anybody else like tell me I couldn't do it or make me feel like I wasn't welcome because I didn't really have any other options.
All right. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Mike.
I do like the way that you look at it and how.
But there's a robot situation happening.
Yeah, he was a little froze over there. You a little froze, Mike. Move or something.
Oh, am I moving?
No, you stuck. You said.
Yeah, you're a robot.
I'm a robot.
Yeah. Now you came back a little bit. Let's see.
Okay.
Type it out. But
yeah. All right.
He said, I guess he loves the way you do your thing. Now you're back. I think you're back now. Go ahead.
There you are.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I was just saying, I love the way that you don't allow the industry to really just tear you down and how you stay, you know, you stay plugged into what you want to do and how you want to do it, and you just keep pushing.
Thank you. Yeah, I am glad that somebody noticed. And you guys.
Yeah, I love that because I think that doesn't allow things to tear you down, and that allows you to keep moving. Because the only way you're going to change the narrative, you have to continue to fight.
Yeah.
You know, so I love that, and thank you again.
No, thank you guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. We'll see you somewhere down the road.
All right. Do I just?
Oh, we got an outro.
Okay. All right.
We got an outro.
All right.
Hey.